Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and last week on our show, remember we talked about how certain urban design techniques can make it uncomfortable for homeless people to sleep outside, like spikes that stick up out of the sidewalk where they had tended to congregate, or benches with armrests in the middle of them so people can't lie down across the bench. Well, as homeless populations are going up in both New York City and Los Angeles, where should homeless people be allowed to live, to sleep, or just to be during the day? In L.A., a federal appeals court has ruled that homeless people can now legally sleep and live in their cars. Why doesn't the social contract regarding homeless people ever really get solved? This latest wrinkle just is a latest wrinkle. Here to talk about this with me now is Gail Holland, a reporter for the L.A. Times, who covers poverty and homelessness out there. Hi, Gail. Thanks for getting up so early in the morning in L.A. Welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you so much.
And the ordinance didn't just say you can't live in your car, right? How much further did it go?
Well, the ordinance banned using your car as a living quarters. So the ban covered daytime activities, sleeping, nighttime activities, eating in your car, storing clothing in your car. These are all the things that the police were instructed to look for when they enforced the ban.
And the court said that was unconstitutionally vague?
Yes, exactly, because the court found that these are the kinds of activities that everybody does. A lot of people, you know, duck into their car to get out of the rain or to drink a cup of coffee or to use their cell phone.
I've heard that a lot of the people who were cited for living in their cars before that this was struck down didn't even sleep in their cars necessarily. They might sleep in a shelter or a motel, but then they might hang out in their cars during the day and store stuff in their cars. So is that why the judge decided that it was an invitation to discriminate against the poor?
Yes, that's part of it, and I think that's a big part of it.
Because non-homeless people do that kind of thing in their cars, too. You should see my trunk.
Exactly. Me as well. I think also that many of these people were, many of the shelters and soup kitchens have limited hours, and actually, in Los Angeles, the daytime hours are the hours when you're not allowed to be in shelters or various other service areas for homeless people and poor people. So that's why these people, even if they were sleeping in shelters at night, were forced to resort to their car in the daytime.
And it was only relatively recently that the police started enforcing this law. Is that why it came to a head?
Yes, it is. The law was passed in the 1980s when the first big burst of homelessness swept through Los Angeles, and especially the beach cities. And in 2010, Venice residents, partly because, you know, Venice, the property values have increased tremendously in Venice, like everywhere else in recent years.
Venice and Beach, so that whole diverse scene out there.
Yes, very diverse. And so there were new residents that were appalled by this kind of street life that has been going on in Venice since the 50s and complained. So Venice formed a police task force and began enforcing this ordinance with 21 extra officers.
By the way, New Yorkers may think this whole conversation is kind of strange. Like, homeless people in L.A. have cars?
Well, in general, living in your car is kind of a step down from in homelessness. Like a lot of people, homelessness doesn't happen in a day. A lot of people have problems. They stay with relatives. They end up in their car and eventually on the street. It is kind of the upper tier, the middle class of the homeless population.
Do they have car insurance?
Well, if they're pulled over and they don't, they're cited for it. So, yeah, often poor people will apply their meager incomes to maintaining their car as far as their registration fees, and car insurance, which, of course, are both legally required in California and I imagine most states.
So do they beg for money on Venice Beach by saying, can you spare a quarter for an oil change? Because that never that never happens in New York.
No, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, there really isn't that much panhandling that goes on, at least in my experience, in Venice Beach or elsewhere in Los Angeles. Most of the people are on welfare or Social Security payments. Many are in their 50s or 60s, and they're trying to get by on these very low public benefits.
Listeners, what do you think about this in all seriousness? Where should homeless people be allowed to live, hang out, sleep, store their stuff? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Are cars a decent temporary alternative for homeless people? 212-433-9692. And why doesn't the social contract regarding homelessness ever seem to get resolved? We keep having these debates in, you know, public circles about can the homeless hang out here? Can they hang their heads there? And we see this latest wrinkle from L.A. And last week on our show, as I said, we were talking about urban design that puts spikes on the ground where people were known to sleep, or armrests in the middle of benches so they can't stretch out there. 212-433-WNYC. Can you establish a principle that everybody would be okay with? 212-433-9692. Or that would just be right, even if everybody wasn't okay with it. Gail, what's your take? Or what's the larger conversation there in L.A.? As an L.A. Times reporter, what do you hear about where homeless people should be allowed to live? Does the car discussion happen in a vacuum, or is there a larger public discussion taking place?
No, there's a huge public discussion taking place. One of the unique things about Los Angeles is that it has the highest unsheltered homeless population. So there are homeless encampments all over the city. And in addition to that, there's a court settlement, which is temporary, but which allows people to sleep on the sidewalks at night. And actually, some of these car dwellers, when they were told they weren't allowed to sleep in their car, they just got out of their car and slept on the sidewalk. The neighbors are, you know, there's always a tension with the neighbors in addition to the cars and the fears they may have of who's in there and why they're sleeping in their car. There's a lot of problems, they report anyway, with garbage and people disposing of waste. And then the public health of the people living in the car is also a concern of the police that they cited in enforcing this ban. As far as car dwelling, the city of Santa Barbara has a safe parking lot that they set aside for homeless people. That was attempted in Venice, or at least broached, but especially because Venice has the beach parking lots along the coast that are generally pretty empty at night, but it didn't fly.
Linda in Verona. I presume that's New Jersey, not Italy, right, Linda?
That's right.
Hi.
Hi. I have a homeless brother. He lives in Southern California, where I grew up. I've married a guy from New Jersey and ended up out here. But he was lost for many years. We couldn't find him. I recently lost my 20-year-old daughter, who had pestered me continuously to find my brother. And I decided, you know, I had to find him. So I went to I finally found him. And my husband and I went out there in April, and I've been working to help him since then. Just a couple things. When they're in the cars, they are moved from place to place, but most of the homeless don't have cars. But some of them do, and they're, you know, told to move on. When they don't have a car, they, just like in New York City, I would think, they get on the bus. My brother gets on the bus, and he moves from town to town at night on the buses. If he can't, you know, if for some reason he's been harassed at the place where he sleeps. But he has found a place to sleep. It's at the top of a metal staircase behind a commercial building. The owner knows he's there. But occasionally he gets harassed by other homeless people, and he claims the police frequently harass him. He's not allowed to go inside anywhere with his bedroll. We've tried to get him to put his bedroll in a storage facility, but even the people who run the storage facilities are not happy to have any homeless people using their facilities. He can't go, you know, so he ends up sitting outside Starbucks. They only let him in to get a coffee. Then he sits outside all day, and he's not a drug user or alcohol. He's like religious. He's become like a born again Christian, and he reads his Bible all day.
What do you think, Linda, that the law should be, or that the rules and just people's tolerance level should be for someone like your brother?
Well, you know, there's a very low tolerance, though there are more facilities and programs in Southern California than any place else. So we've told him to stay there. He's talked about coming out here. We said there's no way you could handle the weather because they can't sleep outside. And, you know, in Venice, for example, you walk on the, you know, the boardwalk, their version of the boardwalk there, and there's homeless people sleeping in the sand all along there. Venice Beach is one of the worst places. It's got a lot of homeless people, but it's also got a whole drug population. You know, everywhere you go, you see the people that are really, really stoned on the streets when you're walking.
But for people who say this just enables folks like your brother to remain down and out and doesn't actually help them in the long run, that it would be better off if there was low tolerance that forces someone like your brother into more services. Do you accept that argument at all?
The problem is they don't get enough money in the services. My brother gets the the disability insurance, but he gets $900 a month, which isn't enough for him to live on in Southern California. Housing alone is, and he is mentally ill. So housing alone, he can't afford. And I've been working with him to get into housing. All the YMCAs used to allow, you know, used to take in the homeless and check them out and give them rooms. That's been wiped out except for two YMCAs down in Southern California.
And Linda, I'm going to leave it there.
They need more housing. Uh-huh. They need a place where they can put them to live. There's lists that go back years for housing, and they do now have housing vouchers. But the housing has to be appropriate for them.
Right, it needs to be what they call supported housing, I imagine, right?
Yeah, and many homeless people don't want services. And if they do, agree to services, it still takes years for them to get into a place where they have a room where they feel safe. They don't feel safe because they've been living on the street for years.
Linda, thank you so much. I appreciate you opening up about your brother. Mary in Rockville Center, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi. This is such a great topic because it reminded me of about 10 years ago. I used to belong to a health club, racquetball club. There was a woman there who, through a whole series of circumstances, had lost her where she was living. She had a job, but she didn't make enough money to actually have an apartment. She had enough money, however, to have a post office box so she could get mail. She had enough money for a gym club membership where she could shower, and she had a locker where she kept her clothes. And she would take showers with her underwear on so that she could wash her underwear and then find a place like in the sauna. She'd sit in the sauna and dry her clothes, which was very interesting. And she had a car.
That sauna's a humid.
The rest of her things, and she would spend as much time as she could at the racquetball club, actually, because it was safe. And then she would park her car in a parking lot behind the police station, which she felt was the safest place to live. And she lived that way for at least a year or more.
Did she get hassled?
Nobody that I knew, and nobody in the racquetball club bothered her. I mean, we all felt bad for her because of a whole series of circumstances, things that had happened to her son, her husband, whatever. There was a murder in the family, and she was really in a great deal of distress. But she did have a job.
So she had this sort of middle-class lifestyle in a certain sense,
right.
But her housing was in her car.
Right, but she had enough resources, and enough, her mind was sufficiently, you know, still put together that she knew that she needed to pay money for that gym club membership every month and the post office box so that she had a, you know, she could get mail.
Mary, thank you very much. By the way, just look it up, and a sauna can be either wet or dry. David in West Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Well, it's funny that that last woman mentioned that because that is the topic I was going to mention myself. I have been homeless before. I am currently on the verge of homelessness. And one of the things I have found is being a member of a 24-hour health club gives you a place to legally park. It gives you a place to shower, to use the restroom. And, you know, I have a job. I usually have a job. I am in the construction industry, and many times work can just stop unexpectedly.
Do you think, David, that this is more of a suburban American phenomenon that a lot of people realize? Because the previous caller was from Rockville Center. You're from West Babylon. We're talking with our guest from L.A. about a town that's car culture. People in New York City think about homelessness as folks who are on a street corner who then maybe go sleep in a subway or in a building doorway or something like that. Do you think this kind of sort of teetering on the brink between working class and poor, living out of your car phenomenon in suburban America is a bigger thing than people realize?
I think that it is. I mean, I have had the experience of being completely homeless, staying in shelters before. And then from there, being able to buy a car, it is such a world of difference when you go from one to the other. And the people with cars are looked on completely differently from the homeless people as being the upper class, as somebody said, of the homeless. But I believe that there is more people than people realize. You know, the whole idea, too, is you don't want to appear to be homeless.
Right.
I mean, you kind of want to keep that disguise from society.
Yeah. David, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
And thank you.
And good luck to you. And so we wrap this up by going back to Gail Holland, reporter for the Los Angeles Times, who is here to talk about the court ruling out there, which gave people more legal permission to live out of their cars. Gail, surprised by the stories you're hearing on our phones?
No, I'm not. We have the same phenomenon of people using the 24-hour fitness places to keep clean and wash their clothes. Certainly people living in doorways with the tacit or explicit permission of the business owners. I think that one thing you brought up, New York. New York, in my experience, is the only city that has a right to shelter law, and most of its homeless are in shelters. In Los Angeles, again, there is not enough shelter space, and there is definitely not enough of the kind of permanent supportive housing that the woman was expressing a need for her brother to get. And the sequestration and other federal cutbacks have actually cut the funds for that kind of housing.
All right. Some views of living on the margins in 2014 in ways that many of you may not have realized are out there. Gail Holland, reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you.